up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like GEICO is more than just a company that can save you money. GEICO also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining. This is Sabra Robinson. We are broadcasting live with our 12th episode, and happy Saturday. So this broadcast is a production of Black Women Widows Empowered, and we are live speaking with the contributors of our first collaboration ever of our literary publication entitled Widowed But Not Wounded, The Hustle and Flow of 13 Resilient Black Women Widows. So I truly appreciate everyone's time, especially since it's the holiday weekend. So before I do forget, happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving to the contributing authors. Happy Thanksgiving to those called in, and happy early Thanksgiving to those streaming. So before we get started, they will share, I just want to let you all know they will share, and how, you know, what we're going to be doing. They're going to share a story, their chapter, and kind of give you some nuggets to take away with. And if you have any questions, if you'd like to, you know, further dig into what their chapter is about, feel free to let me know, and I'll open the line for questions. So I do ask listeners that you do put your phone on mute until I do open the line up for questions for the authors. So without further ado, I'm going to begin with our first author. And again, welcome, authors. Thank you so much. Our first author is Carrie Phillips. She is the founder of Young Widowed and Dating Website. Carrie, are you on the call?
I am, and thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be part of the project.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for being available, especially I know it's a very busy weekend, and I've been looking forward to speaking with everyone. So I did want to just chat with you a little bit, and again, thank you for your time. So can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, Young Widowed and Dating? And can you tell us a little bit about your chapter as well?
Sure. And it's all kind of intertwined. My chapter kind of touches on being a widow suddenly at the age of 32 and just kind of having to reinvent yourself post-loss. I thought like my entire adult life would involve my husband. And, you know, when he died suddenly, it was just, you know, kind of what do I do with myself now? And I eventually realized that, you know, I didn't want to be a bonus spouse, that I just kind of sat there and waited for death to take me too. And as part of that, wanting to live again, I decided that, you know, at some point I'm only 32 and I was, you know, realistically going to have, you know, possibly another half of my life left, and I didn't want to live it alone. And I decided, you know, that I kind of wanted to test the waters and see what it was like dating again. And that's kind of how Young Widowed and Dating came to be, because I found that I was the only young widow that I knew. And, you know, going to my friends with questions about dating, they only had it from their perspective, or dating as a single person, which I think is different than dating when you've had a loss.
Okay.
So. Yeah. Absolutely. I started Young Widowed and Dating, and it's a community for young widows and widowers who are kind of having these challenges of putting yourself back out there and dating, and now you have minor children, and, you know, the whole dating world has changed since we first met our spouses.
Yeah, absolutely. And so has online groups for widows. I know when I was when I first became a widow, it was not a lot of online widowed sites, actually. And now it's a whole lot. And I think yours is just kind of very unique in its own self. So, you know, I applaud you for starting such a needed group for young widows who are looking, you know, to date again and just need some support in that area.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. And it's also a part of my own healing. So it's been very helpful for me as well.
Oh, wow. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah. So my chapter, you know, yes, I do touch on the fact that, you know, I started Young Widowed and Dating, but I think the bigger message that I want to be a takeaway from my particular section is that even though we're broken and that we are still hurting, you're still able to be of help to someone else. So I love the quote that broken crayons still color. So even in my brokenness, I was able to be of assistance to other young widows. And that has been such a key part of my own healing. And you don't have to go start, you know, a support group. It could be something as simple as just sitting with someone who has lost their spouse after you've lost your spouse, because you've kind of gained a little insight and a little knowledge. So you're able to be there for the younger group coming up. And I think that's the key point that I want my chapter to have with the readers, is that even in your brokenness, you are still able to give back and help the widowed community, because oftentimes we feel so isolated. And it's good that there's someone who's gone ahead of you and you're able to reach back and help make a difference in that person's life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. I do appreciate your time. And, you know, I look forward to many new and exciting things from Young Widow Dating. And I want you to have a happy Thanksgiving, and you take care. And thanks again and being a part of this much needed book collaboration. So I do thank you. So
thank you. So
you be well.
You
absolutely,
the same. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right, everyone. That was Keri Phillips from Young Widowed and Dating, and we have a few more to to talk to. So up next, we have Maureen Bobo, and she is one of the co-directors for Hopeful Widows. And I really appreciate her taking the time as well on this, you know, Thanksgiving holiday weekend. And the name of her chapter, and I neglected to say the name of Keri's chapter, but Broken Crayon Still Color. That is Keri's chapter. So for Maureen, her chapter name, which is really, really great, My Dance with Grief, which is a little bit different. She speaks about dancing with grief. So Maureen, are you on the call?
Yes, I am. Sabra, how are you?
I am good. Thank you. How have you been? It's great speaking with you again. I think the last time I had a podcast with you was earlier this year. Before I interviewed you and Chastity and Khadijah for your book collaboration called The Unwelcome Committee. So I, again, appreciate you all taking your time for me to talk more about that. But now I have you individually because you have written, you have agreed to collaborate with this project. And your chapter name is My Dance with Grief, and it was very interesting. I'm not going to speak further on it. That's why I wanted you all here. So if you wanted to kind of introduce yourself and just talk a little bit about your chapter and what the listeners can take away, that would be great.
Awesome. I first wanted to say happy pre-Thanksgiving to everyone listening and on the call, and you, Sabra, and anyone who listens on the playback. Also, I just wanted to thank you, and I don't know if I did or not. Thank you for the opportunity to present this awesome work, Widowed But Not Wounded, to the world, because I think it will be very impactful, and I think it will assist a lot of, not just widows, but grieving people,
yeah,
and help them to get to another place and just in following our story. But briefly, I'll talk about my chapters, how my hustle and flow, because the assignment that we were given, which was very challenging, and I needed that challenge, and thank you for that, was to incorporate hustle and flow into our chapter. And so I kind of cursed you while I was trying to think of stuff, but I was like, hey, bro, I can't think of anything. And so I just sat down and had to get quiet with myself. And then it just, God just brought it over time. It took me a long time and I just had to pray on it and he just brought it to me. And so it became my hustle and flow. How my hustle and basically it's about, I take it from standing in front of my husband, Martin's coffin, who had passed away at age 45. A chronic heart disease after a 10-year battle. And we had, at the time, the children, 8 years old and 2 months old, both girls, standing in front of the coffin at the funeral. And so the chapter starts from there. And as I'm talking myself through it, I'm looking at myself standing there. It's like I'm watching a movie. I'm directing a movie and I'm the star of it. And so then I look up as I... I'm at the front of the coffin and wondering how the kids are. And someone was holding the baby and my 8-year old was interacting with her second grade class who came. And I saw grief standing in the corner at the back of the church. And it became a dance, basically. So I talk about how I walked and I didn't want to go, but I couldn't resist. So he held out his hand and we danced through grief. And so that's how it came to be. So tangled, he was rough with me. Mm. We walked, we discoed, we praise danced. We did a lot through the struggle. And it just talks about, and the ladies will understand this, it talks about the flow and the up and the down. And you don't think you're going to make it. The waves are going to take you over. But then as in my estimation, as time went on, I became stronger. And at the end of the day, I realized that God was in control. That doesn't mean that I still didn't have ups and downs, but I was going to be okay. So I want people to take from my chapter that, yes, this is the worst time of your life. Yes, it's very painful. Yes, you feel like you're not going to make it. For me, my anchor was and still is Christ. And so I had an anchor. And I, at some point in my dance with grief, I realized that I was going to be okay. In fact, towards the end, I became even stronger. And instead of him throwing me around, I held him on a keychain in my pocket. And so that I was in control. So that's what it became. But it didn't happen overnight. I'm almost in April, it'll be 8 years since my husband passed away. But this is where I am right now. So right now I'm focused on purpose. This is just my journey.
All right.
You know, this is just my journey. So that's it.
Yeah. Focus on purpose. I like that. I like that. And it's, you know, when I read your chapter, it was, it kind of made me chuckle because you were real with it. I was like, okay. Yeah, I loved it. I really loved it. It was, you know, everyone's was different. And that's what I liked it because it was, everyone wrote in their own style, you know, each chapter was unique and each chapter had a message. So thank you so much for providing, you know, a summary of your chapter and what the listeners can take away. So as always, you have a great Thanksgiving. And I'm going to go ahead and move on to our next author, Letitia Bowie. Letitia, are you on the call?
I am on the call, and I just want to say thank you for allowing me to be a part of this project with all of these wonderful, wonderful women. I am absolutely humbled, so I appreciate being a part of this book and being a contributor to this book.
Absolutely, and one of the things I want to say was, you know, I can't, you know, I'm very much appreciative for all of you for volunteering to. Be a part of this project. You know, I know we started in February and now we're down to the wire. So, it's been great. It's been, you know, it's been different. It's been, you know, we all have our challenges and writing the chapter and, which just makes us stronger, at least makes us more, wiser, I would have to say. But thank you again as well. And listeners, this is Letitia Bowie, and she is the nonprofit founder of Dialogos Survivors Support and Postvention. And the name of her chapter is Caterpillar, Cocoon, and Butterfly. So, Letitia, if you could just kind of give us, you know, talk to us about your nonprofit. Doesn't have to be lengthy, just kind of put a little nugget in there about it. And then you can just go straight into your chapter and then give the listeners a little bit of, you know, some nuggets as to what they can take away.
Okay. I am the founder of Dialogos Postvention. And just a little FYI, my husband passed away due to suicide. And so Dialogos is a support group for widows who have, and widowers who have lost us to suicide. And losing a spouse in that manner comes with a whole new set of secondary issues and secondary loss issues, along with and on top of your normal, and normal is relative, your normal flowing through the grief process. And so I found when my husband passed away that there were a plethora of resources for prevention, and there should be, but there were very minimal resources for postvention. Because suicide is going to happen, whether we like it or not. And we don't want to admit that, but it will happen. I didn't think it would happen to me, and it did. So what do we do to support the families after it happened? And so I created Dialogos to provide the resources and services that I couldn't find for me and my children as we processed through our tragedy. So.
All right. Well, thank you. It's very much needed. So I do appreciate that. You know, your Facebook page is filled with very good, you know, great insights and informational resources for, you know, widows who fall into that category whose husbands have passed away due to suicide. So it's a great and wonderful and much needed nonprofit. So thank you for that. And if you want to go ahead into your chapter, that would be great.
Yes. So this also integrates into my chapter, because for the reason my husband passed away in the manner that he did, sometimes as a widow, I don't feel I have the right to grieve as other widows, because suicide comes with a lot of, suicide comes with a lot of, with usually a negative backstory. And, my chapter is entitled Cocoon, and I'm sorry. Just trying to get my thoughts together.
Butterfly. That's okay.
Caterpillar, cocoon, butterfly. Because my marriage was not the greatest marriage. My marriage borderlined on abusive, and it trickled over into abusive. And so I did not have the greatest marriage like, you know, some of the other widows. And so when he passed away, I found that I didn't have an identity, not because he passed away and all of a sudden I have to reinvent myself. I found that I didn't have an identity because I never was able to form an identity into the marriage during the course of the marriage, because of the abuse in the marriage. I was always trying to please him, trying to please the people around us, trying to be someone I wasn't, and it was never good enough. And so when he passed away, I started finding me. And I started finding out that it was okay to be me. And I started finding out some things about myself that I had to be truthful about. I was a yes person. I was always in agreement with everyone. I had a rejection. I sought approval from everyone. And so I was always this person that wanted to be a people pleaser, because I didn't want people to leave me. I didn't want people to reject me. And I found that when I stopped being that person that they were used to me being, people, you know, they rejected me anyway and they abandoned me anyway. And so what I found was it was okay to be me. It was okay to be myself. Who I was just fine. Good, bad, ugly, and indifferent. And the people that would accept me for who I really was would stick around and help me and be patient with me and allow me to process through this tragic situation. And, you know, my chapter is all about just coming into who I was and getting rid of the negative narrative that I was this bad person and I was this awful person and I was not good enough. And this narrative, and I talk about this in my chapter, this narrative flows all the way back to my childhood. It started with my mother and then it flowed through some other situations that I talk about. And then my marriage, it happened in the church we grew up in, you know, you are not good enough. And I accepted that narrative until he passed away. And then I started reinventing myself and finding out who I really was and being okay with that person.
All right. All right. And you mentioned the church, and that's a whole another story in itself when it comes to grief. So that's a whole new podcast. But yeah, you kind of touched on that in your chapter as well. So it's really exciting. Thank you so much. Is there anything that you would like for any of the readers to kind of take away with?
What I want the listeners to take away with, whether no matter how your husband or spouse passed away, when you experience grief, you do change. And that's okay. It is okay to change, good, bad, ugly, and indifferent. And people have the right to accept the changed you or reject the changed you. But grief, no matter how it happens, it does change you. You'll never be the person that you were before. And it's absolutely okay. And you accept the people that's okay with it. And you just kind of flow with the people that are not okay with it. So
absolutely.
It's okay to be you.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I see that we do have a few callers on the line. Listeners, those who are checking us out, thank you so much for joining. I'm just opening up right now for any questions that you may have. So I'm not going to put you on the spot, but if you do have a question, I have unmuted your line. If you have a question for any of the contributing authors who have spoken so far, feel free to ask away. And then at the end of the show, I'll also ask the same question. So does anyone have anything they'd like to ask?
Hey, Sabra, this is Melody Aria. I have a question for Letitia. After your husband's suicide, did you get family support, specifically from his family?
That question comes up an awful lot. when it comes to suicide, the person is either seen as the victim or the villain, depending on what side of the coin that you're on. And so some family definitely supported me. Some family blamed me. And that's how society looks at it. You know, the spouse drove them to it. It's your fault. Yeah. You could, you know, even as a woman of God, you know, you don't have a prayer life. You couldn't pray him out of that. You couldn't stop that from happening. And so you have this victim or villain situation, and it just depends on what side of the coin that people are on as to how they approach you. So I had support from some. I had no support from others. There's a lot of people that pulled away from my children, which was the biggest disappointment. And so very limited support, I would say. So very limited.
Yeah, the reason I ask that is sometimes we as widows don't get the family support we expect to begin with, but particularly with a suicide, I would imagine, as you said, that victim or villain scenario would play out. And I'm so sorry you had to go through that.
Thank you. I'm sorry for your situation also.
We're all sorry. We're sorry we have to be here. That's basically it. I wish I didn't have to do this podcast, but I am. because I'm in the same situation. So I just truly appreciate the ability to be able to give someone a voice and give you all a voice and to tell your story. Do we have any other questions? All right, we'll go ahead and move on. Our next contributing author is Kimberly Wiggins. Her title, the title of her chapter is called Tonight's Top Story. And Kimberly Wiggins is a morning anchor at WBOC-TV on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. And she's also launched a faith-based retail company with another widowed sister, she calls Whisper, called Still His. And it's for those who would like to share their love for the Lord and or for a spouse. And it's a great Christian retail product company online, stillhis.com. So Kimberly, are you on the call?
I am.
Thank you for joining. Welcome. Again, happy early Thanksgiving. And let's go right into your chapter, today's top story. And if you would like to, talk about Still His, feel free to do so.
Thank you. And again, I really can't thank you guys enough just for including me. This just listening to everyone's stories so far really have already encouraged me. And I just feel so honored to be a part of this project. So this really, really is an exciting thing.
Thank you.
Of course. For me, when Rashid was killed, April 16, 2016, I was already in a transition period. I had decided to get out of TV news. I had been out for about a year and a half. I was just mentally exhausted. And for some reason, Rashid would always say, I think you need to take this time and you need to relax and enjoy it because you're probably not going to have this time again, whether it's because of kids or work or whatever. And he actually would really push me to try and just relax. And thank God he did, because of everything that happened and where I am now. But, it was a normal day, a normal Saturday, and we were home just hanging out on the couch. And he was always tinkering on something, always had a million ideas he was working on in his free time. And decided around 11 o'clock at night to go get some snacks. And he wanted to walk because we lived in Florida and it was a nice, and he walked across the street from our complex. I remember him closing the door and saying he was fine to walk, even though I begged him to take the car. And I never saw that smile again. He was hitting a hit and run and involving three cars and we're still looking for the first two.
Oh my goodness.
So, I mean, that honestly, it brought things out of me that I never imagined were in me. I mean, obviously I knew I was a hard worker and could do things, that we'd gone through things in our past. But since then, it's just really put me on a path I never expected. I mean, I can talk to anybody who's walking this walk. Every day is a struggle sometimes just to get up and breathe and, eat and, halfway make it to work and look like a decent person. It takes everything in you. But I, decided to kind of push through things and figure out a way to get through and still find meaning in my life and his. And I'm, working on legislation in his name, working on a hit and run alert system in Florida. I am trying to make sure that last big project he was working on does launch, as well as Still His, which is all about, encouraging and providing support for other Whisters. And, we have the retail arm of it, but we also have started these brunches or dinners that we do and gather Whisters in local areas.
Yeah.
They've
that
been really,
so
really awesome.
Too. Yeah.
Thank you.
That is so neat.
And, thank you. And it's just all about just trying to get through each day. And sometimes I sit there and I think, I don't know how I did any of this, because literally every day I want to give up, but then literally every day I see Rashid, I see my husband, and I hear his voice and I hear him saying just one more thing, or just get up one more day, just make that one call. And that's what he was always about. He was always doing a million things and he'd always be just try, and if it doesn't work, it's okay. And so that's all about what I'm trying to do now. And I think that's kind of what I try to touch on in my chapter. Just try.
Just trying. You're a busy woman, too. You have a lot going on. And you have to be up in the morning to anchor. Wow. You have a lot. And I commend you. Yeah. I applaud you.
Well, thank you. And I will say that's also a very unique aspect of it. When, you know, when my husband was killed, I was out of the business, but I also had to work with my friends. And so that meant, you know, my life then became a story. And so the people who I worked with in the newsroom were calling me to try to set up a press conference and, you know, were then in my house, not for us to just hang out, but to interview me and, you know, to do follow-ups. And then the law enforcement officers who I used to call for other stories were now the ones I was calling for updates on my husband's case. And so it it's just a different thing. And even now it still affects me where I can't read a hit and run story. And the first one that popped up in the newscast, it literally brought me to tears and I had a meltdown in the newscast and I had to stop and we had to like just get through it. And then I was a wreck. And so now I can't read them. My co-anchor has to read them. And even sometimes when I have to read the word widow, it just conjures up all these images. And so it affects you, you know, death affects the living a lot of ways we don't realize it or people think about it. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And is there anything that you would like for any of the, you know, the listeners to take away with from your chapter?
Yes, I think my biggest thing is to try to live in the love. On my darkest days, I try to remind myself how much that man loved me. And I just try to remember that the love still lives and that I am here to still try to give that love in various ways that I can, whether it's providing support to another Worcester or helping out a family member or doing whatever, but to remember that love is still here and I'm still here for a reason. And I just got to try to figure it out. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much. And I have opened up the line for those listeners. If you have any questions for Kimberly or any questions for any of the contributing authors who have already spoken, now is your time. I don't want to put you on the spot, but you do have the opportunity. Okay. And we'll move on. Thank you, Kimberly. I really appreciate it, and God bless you. We'll go ahead and Melody. Melody, are you on the call?
Melody sure am. Brown.
Thank you for leading at work.
And so, you know, I'm so honored to be part of this project and to be part of this podcast with my fellow co-authors and fellow widows. I'm Melody Brown, also known as Aria Moreno on Facebook. It's because I hate social media with a passion. That's why I'm incognito. If I didn't have to have this Facebook page to be part of this network, I would not have a Facebook page. But anyway, my chapter is entitled The Hustle and Flow of Melody, Journaling My Despair. And I focus on mental health and self-therapy. And my grief counselor recommended that I keep a journal. And too often we as Black women think of ourselves, you know, as a strong Black woman who don't need therapy or counseling. And we believe we can pray away our mental health issues. And believe me, I know prayer works, but God put counselors and therapists here for a reason. And I certainly took advantage of that for myself and my two sons after my husband died. And writing down my feelings in a journal was really, really therapeutic. So I'm going to give you some background and a little excerpt from my journal. But on January 27, 2014, my husband Anthony died unexpectedly of a heart attack, a massive heart attack. I moved forward without him, teaching at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, raising my two teenage sons, Richard and Robert, and taking care of my ailing mother. One of the ways I've coped with the loss of my husband is to keep a journal and express my feelings, frustrations, and joys in writing. And here are some excerpts from my journal since Anthony passed away. And this personal journal helped sane over the past few years. And I hope you can relate to my journey as a widow while finding some hope and solace in my writing. My hustle and flow is based on resilience and a self-awareness of my feelings of grief and how to cope. So this first excerpt is the day that my husband died, and I wrote, "When I woke up this morning at 5:45 a.m., I didn't think or even imagine that I would go to bed a widow. My beloved husband Anthony died at 7:01 a.m. He was going about his routine, preparing for work. He had a massive heart attack and collapsed on the stairs. The medics worked on him for 20 minutes but couldn't save him. And I have this morning etched in my memory, including the way Anthony looked at me as he gasped for air and tried desperately to remain in this world. My life changed in an instant. My heart aches." And then Sunday, March 23rd of that year, I wrote a quote from William Wordsworth that I really, really like and refer to quite a bit. "Though nothing can bring back the hour of splendor in the grass or glory in the flower, we will grieve not remains behind." I miss Anthony every day. I'm trying to find strength in what remains, my children.
Yeah.
And although Richard and Robert are just becoming men, I still cling to them for my strength and happiness. I know I'll have to let go and get a life of my own without Anthony, and that's the hard part. And then on June 30th, I think one of the paragraphs there really expressed how I've been coping with depression. I wrote, "Yesterday, I found myself in a deep depression. Today, I'm brushing myself off and reflecting on all of my blessings. I know I can't always shake off my depression, and I've talked to my grief counselor about this many times. However, I found the best way to dig myself out of depression is to stop and thank God for all he has done for me." And I would say, for me, my takeaway is that, number one, it is important to get counseling. As I said, I know we as Black women can be stubborn sometimes in doing that. My sons now are being pretty stubborn about continuing their thing, but I think it's important. I also find that keeping a journal and just being in touch with your feelings, writing down, you know, your sadness, your anger, all the things that you go through is important just to get those emotions out, reflect on them, and focus on your future and set goals. Because that was part of the journaling as well. I started to write down goals that I wanted to achieve and, you know, things from trying to get healthy because I knew I was my children's only remaining parent. You know, I lost weight. I've been trying to keep up with an exercise and diet regimen. I have my mother who has dementia, which, again, from a stress standpoint, can, you know, it can be overwhelming at times. But I made a vow, you know, to continue to take care of her to the best of my ability, but to just do whatever I could to set goals for myself, both personally, professionally, so that I could keep it moving. Because that's the thing. We've got to find the strength to keep going. It's not just for ourselves, for our children, for our other family members. You know, we have to keep going. So, you know, the way you can cope, again, sometimes just step back, assess how far you've come, the blessings you have, and just get those feelings out. And sometimes putting them on paper really helps.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Melody. You know, you did stress an important takeaway, and that is to get counseling. And a lot of African-American women, you know, unfortunately, we don't do that. And it's not a bad thing. You know, it's very much needed, in my opinion, and other, you know, practitioners, their opinions as well. So thank you for touching on that. Do we have any questions? Yeah, thank you. I'm going to open up the line. We do have a few listeners. And again, thank you, listeners, for joining. And I have opened up, unmuted your line. Do you have any questions or anything you'd like to ask for any of the contributing authors? Now is the time to ask. All right. Well, thank you again, Melody, and we'll go ahead and move to the next contributor, and that is Danielle James. Danielle, are you on the call?
I am. Thank you all. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Yes. Thank you for being here and giving your time for this holiday weekend. So I'm excited for everyone, for what they will be doing for the widows that are listening to this, and how you're going to affect all of the readers once the book is published December 1st. So thank you again, Danielle. And listeners, this is Danielle Jane. And Danielle, the title of your chapter is The Life of the Paparazzi Party. Give us a little bit of information about your background, and feel free to go ahead and just delve into your chapter.
Okay. I was 32 when my husband died. He died in a car accident. The kids and I were in the vehicle on the highway at the time of the accident. So it was very sudden. Wasn't expected. I was with Mark at the age of 18 to 32. So he was the only man that I knew. He was my life. And we had two children at the time. Our daughter was 2 and our son was 8. So my whole world had changed in an instant. I had told my mom, hey, we made it to Jacksonville. And that was, you know, an exit away from his sister's house. And 15 minutes later, we were involved in a car accident. So, you know, my daughter was smiling and happy one minute, and she fell asleep, and she woke up and she didn't have a dad. So it was very hard. And, you know, the pain that I felt as a wife that lost a partner in crime, it was heavy. I honestly thought, you know, that our time would be forever, but God had a different plan, and I wasn't ready for that plan, but I knew that I couldn't just be stuck in my grief because I had 2 people looking up to me. You know, they felt my energy. So I had to just continue on with my hustle and flow. And I worked as a case manager for Mobile Mental Health for 9 years. So I knew the mental health aspect of it. But when I went back to work, I stayed off work for a month after he passed, and I had to drive my consumers around. So I developed PTSD and depression. And one incident, I was taking a consumer back to his doctor's appointment, and I just knew we were about to get hit, and I freaked out. And it caused my consumer to want to get out the car and fight. And I'm like, okay, I can't do this. So I had to quit my job, you know, as a case manager because I couldn't deal. I couldn't drive anymore. I would get nervous every time a car is next to me. So I did resign, and I was off for a year. And the title, The Life of the Paparazzi Party, came 2 years after my husband passed because I'm now an independent jewelry consultant with Paparazzi Jewelry and Accessories. We sell $5 jewelry. And so right now I have built a team. It was when I started the chapter, a team of 45 women, we're up to 66. But in my book, it talks about the accident. It talks about my relationships, and I started dating 22 months after my husband passed. And I, as a widow, I was like, I'm never getting married again. I don't want anyone else but my husband. All I wanted was him. But those feelings start to come back slowly. So I tried the dating thing, but I'm like, what is dating? I don't know what dating is. I don't know how to talk to multiple men. You know, if I talk to one person and they show me attention, I fall too fast, you know? So I put you know, my energy and passion in a man and in that relationship, and I got my heart broken, and it was lost after loss. And so I started Paparazzi, and I was like, okay, you know, it was just something to do. But then I'm like, okay, I put all my passion and energy in a man and in this relationship when I see my Paparazzi sisters striving and they're ranking up, and I'm like, I know my worth. I need to stop it, and I need to enjoy this journey in this Paparazzi life. And I've ranked up to premier director, and I'm starting now, and I'm like, okay, they asked us, what is your why? And now
I know my why. I know how I can become in this company to where I want to start a nonprofit for widows and widowers with young children. I want to have paparazzi, that residual income. I want to build a foundation, and I want people to be able to get counseling, because counseling is needed. You know, I want them to be able to pay for their medications and pay for utilities and assistance, because we've gone down from two incomes to one, and it's hard.
Yes.
It's very hard. So, you know, the life of the paparazzi party, that's my story. It just talks about how I'm making money in this $5 business and I'm loving it. You know, I finally decided to make it about me again, and I have my own brand. I'm Chic Diva, that jewelry lady, and it's something I can call my own, and and I'm enjoying the journey now. And I, you know, it's hard. I still have my days, because I want my husband there for my recognition when I'm at the jewelry convention. But, you know, God will send me that man that will understand this emotional roller coaster that I'm on. I can be happy one minute and curse you out the next. But that's just grief. That's just the way it is. And, you know, I have to find someone that's going to accept me and all of my flaws. And, you know, if one thing I want you to take away from my chapter is, you know, we have that faith. We have to have that faith. That faith does not make things easy, but it makes it possible.
I like that. I like that. Girl, I thought you already gave us the takeaway. I thought the takeaway was, what is your why? I like that.
I had a couple of takeaways.
You had several. So I do. Wow. That is awesome. That is awesome. You basically talked about your whole chapter, and that is awesome.
All right.
Of course you have other, you know, information in your chapter that you have not founded on this podcast, but thank you for, you know, being transparent. And you touched on, you know, a couple of things, a lot of things that, you know, what we go through, you know, we go down from two incomes to one in most cases. And, you know, you have to ask yourself, what is your why? And you touched on dating issues. You know, you thought you had to put your whole energy in dating. But no, you figured it out. That wasn't working. So you put your whole energy in your business. And that is awesome. That's an awesome takeaway. What is your why? And have faith.
Thank you
so much, Danielle. Thank you so much. I do appreciate your time. And we're going to, you know, we still have a few more authors to chat with. So next up, we have Rhonda Butler, Beverly Jeter.
Hello. Hello.
Hi. Who's on the call? Hello.
Hi.
This is Sabra.
This is Cheryl.
Hey, Cheryl. Thanks for joining.
Thank you so much for joining.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we kind of lost connection there, but hey, we will press on. So thank you again. And I'm eager to talk with you. So now your chapter, Rebuilding Me After His Hustle Ended. Wow. Your chapter, your chapter title really just kind of tells your whole story. So I truly appreciate, you know, you being transparent as well. It was a wonderful read, and you were real. You know, everything was real.
Thank you.
But I love the flow of how you wrote your chapter. So if you could just kind of expound on your chapter and kind of give a takeaway for the listeners, that would be great.
Sure, I can do that. My chapter basically details the journey from getting married to my husband and living our lives and having our sons and everything to the moment that he got sick. He was diagnosed with end-stage renal failure at the age of 43, and it was brought on by lupus. So I was already, I'm a good wife. I consider myself a good wife and a good mother, and I took care of my family like I was supposed to, like I wanted to. But then when this came up, I can't even think of the word, I had to do it because I wanted to keep my family together, and family was all to me. family is still all to me. So I was there at every doctor's appointment, every hospital day, every blood draw, almost every dialysis treatment that I could go to when I didn't have to work. I was there for him every time he needed me. And I still had to be there for my kids. I have two boys. They were, 5 years ago, 15 and 8 when all this started. So I had to take care of them, pay all the bills, and I still worked. So I kept it going. I took care of everything. And, you know, I didn't even realize how tired I was getting, how frustrated and upset and angry I was getting. And then he got sick, really sick for the last time. He died of sepsis. And after that moment, it was like, what do I do? What do I do with myself? I have no idea what to do. I still have my boys to take care of. I still have my bills to pay. But he had just been this huge part of my life, even before he got sick. You know, it was all about him and I. We were two peas in a pod. We were each other's best friends, everything. So once all of the activity around his funeral and taking care of the paperwork and getting rid of his medical supplies, all that stuff died down, I had no idea what to do with myself. So I kind of just let myself sink. I literally felt myself sinking into my bed. I could feel that because I just had no purpose. And my kids are now 18, were 18 and 10 by then. So they didn't need me so much. They were off doing their own thing. So it was just me. So after a few months, more than a few months of that, I went back to school and I decided, okay, maybe if I go back to school, I can bring myself up. So I went back to school. I made the president's list. I worked hard. That's what I do. I work hard. But it just didn't fulfill it for me. It just wasn't working for me. So I went to the doctor. She said, you know, you have clinical depression and we need to take care of that. And I'm pre-diabetic. I just let myself go. So once the doctor started telling me all of these things, I said, okay, I need to do something for myself because I can't exist like this and my boy still needs me. So I started writing for myself. And then I met you. That's how the story changes.
I met you. Well, you know, you have your own blog, and that encourages a lot of widows, widowness and light. And so, you know, I can see how you just pour your heart into your writing. And a lot of us, that's what a lot of us have come to do, you know, just write down, either we journal or we write a blog, and you've come a long way.
Yeah, I feel like I have. And doing the blog actually helps me get those feelings out, just like you said, because I live in Florida and none of my family lives here. So it's literally just me and my boys. I don't have a lot of friends because I work all the time. So when I write my blog, I feel like I'm talking to somebody about how I feel. And then when people say, yes, I agree. Yes, I feel this too. It's like we're having the same conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So someday I do plan to write a book.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see that. I can see that as well. In your chapter, you know, I know you touched on, you know, the end of life. Can you expand on that a little bit? I think, you know, I've been in that situation too, where you have to make that decision of, you know, pulling the respirator, you know, and I thought that really touched me because I found myself in the same predicament as well.
Yeah. That's the toughest thing. You think you've been through the toughest thing that you've ever been through, try to do that. He hadn't been responding to the medications. Like I said, he had sepsis, so they had him on all these medicines to keep his blood pressure steady. And
He had to be on continuous dialysis because he had so much infection. But it came a point where the nurse looked over at me and said, you know, none of this is really working. We have it all on max. And I just looked back at her and said, so why do we keep doing this to him? We need to stop flogging him. Because I felt that's what, but I felt like that is what we were doing. So they asked me if I wanted to sign a DNR, and I said, okay, yes, no. At that moment, your mind is just going everywhere. Do I really want to do this? Am I crazy? Am I killing my husband? What is happening here? So they asked me to sign the paperwork. I did. I signed what was called a partial DNR, which means if he started to go downhill after they turned everything off, that they would try and resuscitate him.
Yeah.
Once they turned everything off and things started to go down a little bit, I changed my mind. I decided I didn't even want them to put the paddles on and shock him and give him whatever medicines wake you up. I just said, okay, if he can't do this by himself, then he needs to just go ahead and go.
Mm.
And he fought that battle.
He fought that battle. Wow.
He fought the battle for a half an hour and just, you know, he was gone.
Is there anything that you would like for the listeners to take away with, either in regards to that situation or just, you know, what you've gone through in general?
In that situation, just, I hate the cliche word, be strong, but just be strong. Know the answer to that question before you go in that room, because I did know the answer to the question. We talked about it years and years ago. And it takes everything you got to do it. And you know it's the right thing to do. Go ahead and do it. And don't flog yourself about it later.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's excellent. Because like I said, I'm sure there are a lot of widows who have been placed in that situation. So thank you so much for that nugget of wisdom. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Cheryl Barnes.
Thanks, Ava.
Yes. And we'll move on to the next contributing author. Rhonda Butler, are you on the call? Try this again. Rhonda? Okay. We will move on to Beverly. Beverly Dieter, are you on the call?
Yes, I am.
Hi, lady. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Sabra?
I am doing well on a great and beautiful Saturday. Thank you for joining. I do appreciate it. Listeners, this is Beverly Kelly Dieter. She wrote a chapter entitled The Drink That Remains. When I read that line, I was like, oh, my God, that is a great chapter title. You would have to read... Listeners, you would have to read her chapter to figure out what that means. But Beverly, thank you so much for joining. I do appreciate it. And just want to, you know, discuss a little bit about, you know, give the listeners a little bit of, you know, information about your chapter and what you would like for them to take away with.
Well, first, I would like to thank you for allowing me the opportunity to participate in this project. And for being the founder of the Black Widows Empowered Group. I also would like to tell you a little bit about my chapter. My chapter is about my husband's death and significant other people in my life who have passed away and how I cope with it. I hope to stress self-care and seeking help if you need it. Grief is a very serious subject, but I try to add a little humor, and I talk briefly about sex. I wrote this and thought that it was a golden opportunity to reach out to other widows. I have to let you know I was very nervous about doing this and putting myself out there, but I'm hoping that it will help other widows that find themselves in similar situations as I did. And what I would like the readers to take away is there is life after loss, and it can be a fulfilling life, and it's not easy. You should not try to go around grief. It's something that you have to go through. And if you need help, don't be afraid to ask for it. I've personally been seeing a therapist for years, and I continue to see one. If someone asks you if there's something that they can do to help you, accept the help. Don't be too proud to ask for or to accept help. So
absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you.
So, you're welcome.
Mm-hmm. I was going to read a
little bit about the drink situation, but I don't want to. Do you want me to read that, or will it give away the title?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. This is just a small section of the chapter that I wrote, and it starts out. Okay, back to the day he died. I insisted that I would be okay and that he need not bring my wallet. But he wanted to. I said, bring it by lunchtime. There's a place I would like to take you. He came by, picked me up, and we enjoyed a nice lunch, although he barely ate any of his salad and did not finish his drink. This was a drink that would remain on my counter for weeks, if not months. I could not bear to throw it away. It was the remains of our last meal together. And crazy as it seemed, on some level, throwing that drink away would be like throwing a part of him away. So that refers to the title of my chapter.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow, the drink that remains. It has to be hard seeing that drink.
It was.
Wow. Thank you for that. And so, your nugget to the listeners, don't be afraid or proud to accept help. And we do, you know, because we feel we don't want to bother anyone, you know.
Right.
We feel that we don't want to put our burdens on anyone. But don't be too proud. I definitely get it. You know, I've been in that situation as well. Don't be too proud, you know. We've got to reach out and ask.
Yes.
You've got to reach out and ask for help, whether it's counseling, whether it's, you know, just reaching out to a friend or a family. You never know. The only thing they could say is no, and just ask someone else. So I do appreciate your time. Thank you for that summary of your chapter, The Drink That Remains. And I want you to have a safe and joyous Thanksgiving next week.
Same to you.
Thank you,
all the listeners out there.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And we'll go ahead. We have our final contributing author. Her name is Khadija Ali. Khadija, are you on the call?
I'm here. Can you hear me, Sabra?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. Thank you for joining.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for inviting all of us here to be on the line today to share what I believe is a very, very important work. I think that what we have been able to do together, what you have spearheaded is something that is very unique that will be released very soon here. So thank you for having me and having all of us.
Absolutely. Thank you. And listeners, Khadija, she is one of the co-directors, again, for Hope for Widows Foundation, and one of our other contributing authors, Maureen Bobo. She's right alongside Khadija as well. So I'm just thankful and grateful and humbled that they've accepted, you know, my request or, you know, reached out and said, hey, I want to be a part of it as well about this project. So thank you to the both of you for your, you know, your participation and your effect on my life as well. So Without yes. further ado, Khadijah, I'll go ahead and just hand it over to you. And I know okay. you're a podcaster as well, so right. I appreciate you. So
absolutely. So, you know, of course, my chapter deals with mental health. And as I was sitting here listening to everyone else share and just being so moved by everyone's stories, I was reflecting on my chapter. And the one thing that I wanted to get people to, I guess the one thing I want people to understand, and it's something that if you're a Black woman listening to this podcast that you may know already, is putting the mask down. And although my chapter is on mental health and the journey that I took through mental health all the way up until this year, what is interwoven into my chapter is wearing this mask and how I put the mask on. You know, when my husband, I remember the doctor walking in, and I talk about it in the chapter, the doctor walking in and saying that there was nothing else that he could do. And my husband's concern was not like, am I going to live, or I want to live, but like, what's going to happen to my wife and my children? And in that instant, I didn't realize it then, but I realize it now, I was putting on the mask then because I didn't want him to see me internally falling apart. But that was what was happening. But I felt, because super Black woman has to put on her cape and put on her mask, let me put it on, regardless of whom or what. And, you know, he did die, and there was a lot going on, and I talk about it in the chapter. And I had to just deal with it. You know, in my mind, I had to deal with it. If it was to be, it was going to be up to me. And it was detrimental in the long run, very detrimental in the long run. And a lot of times in the African American community, the Black community, we don't feel like mental health is a part of taking care of ourselves. And my grandmother is twice widowed. And I remember her saying to me, because I told her I was going to counseling, "What, you don't need to go to counseling. All you need to do is pray." And I was like, "Grandma, I pray every day. You know, I need help." And so I guess my takeaway would be, don't be afraid to go get help and get counseling. Take off the mask, put it down, be transparent, and go and have someone hold space for you. Have someone hold space for you and talk through your issues with your counselor. Even if it's, listen, if you really feel like you don't want to go to a quote-unquote regular mental health counselor, go with, you know, if your church has counseling, go sit down and have that counseling with your pastor, you know?
Yes.
But you have to take that mask off, and you have to be real and transparent. And I'm the most happy person in the world. I'm the most positive person you can have and ever imagine to be. But I have a history in my family and within my own personal history of depression and anxiety. And so it's time to take off the mask. And that's what I want to leave the listeners with. And thank you again, Faber, for allowing me to be a part of this project.
Anytime. Thank you. And I certainly appreciated, you know, your summary of your chapter. And her chapter, listeners, A Black Woman's State of Mental Health. And it is filled with, oh goodness, just everything that we as Black women go through as far as our mental health. And thank you for your transparency, you know. Just reading everyone's chapter just sent chills, you know, through my body, because I could relate to every single one. The mental health, absolutely. Counseling, absolutely, or not going. You know, it took me 5 years to really go. And so I thank you for writing that chapter, because it really, really is important to us as a Black community, even if we're not widowed. I mean, it's something that we really need to consider in the Black community. So thank you, Khadijah. Thank you so much. And thank you for your nugget of, you know, put the mask down. Are there any questions from the listening audience? We've listened to 10 of the authors, and I'm sure there's got to be one question out there for any of our contributing authors.
Saber, this is Melody. I don't have a question. I just want to comment on what Khadija was saying and just echo every single thing that she said about taking off the mask and stop trying to be Black Superwoman, you know, because sometimes it can be exhausting emotionally and physically as well. But more importantly, that message of self-care and, you know, a willingness to get help, counseling, therapy, and overcome your fears. I was going to ask Danielle, I don't know if she's still on the call, how she overcame that fear of getting behind the wheel and driving again, because I can imagine I would have the same phobia and PTSD that she did.
Truthfully, because, we pray, but God sends us doctors for medication. Mm-hmm. So I started taking Effexor, my medication on a regular basis, and it calmed my anxiety down. So yes, good. We have to pray. Yes, we have to go to counselors, but we also have to take the medication that's there for us for the, you know, specific reasons. And I know at the time and right now I'm not going to say I'm going to take this medication forever, but I'm not going to be naive about the fact that I don't need it. And at the time, I do pray, and I'm praising God in advance that I won't have to take it for the rest of my life. But right now, I know I need it. And even when I'm driving, I'm fine now. It's just when I'm in a car with someone else. Because I was a passenger, and you know, so I still get that. And my sister, like, I'm not riding nowhere long time with her unless y'all give her something. You know, I still have that, and it still hits me. You know, I had a really, really good friend of mine who just died in a car accident a week and a half ago, and it just brought in the medication don't help right now because it's the same thing. Somebody hit her in her mom's driveway with her two kids in the car. So it brought back a lot of painful memories right now. And I can laugh and smile, but it hurts so bad, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, still dealing with it. You just have to have that faith that, okay, God, you brought me out this last tragic moment. You can bring me out of this grief moment. You can, you know, just have faith. I know it's not going to be easy, but I know it's possible. And that's where I am.
I know it's a work in progress because I still have a phobia, I think, of just losing someone I love. You know, after my husband passed, I just kind of wrapped around my son even tighter because the fear of losing one of them became so intensified. You know, I tend to be overprotective as a parent anyway. I find myself being really worried, you know, if I don't get a phone call, if they're on the road and I don't hear from them, you know, all these little things, like you said, it build these anxieties and fears of losing another person that you love deeply. So, you know, my mother, you know, things like that. And like I said, you have to pray, but also whatever else it takes, counseling, medication to calm your nerves and get you back on track. You know, you do what you have to do.
Saber, this is Letitia. May I make a comment towards that?
Sure.
Because that was also part of my chapter because my husband was a minister and he grew up in the church. And I spent a significant amount of time in the church. And sometimes we can't necessarily, you know, go openly and to the pastor and grieve how we need to grieve because the church, and I think the quote for one of the promos was for me, was, you know, sometimes in the church we develop this super saint syndrome. And so people tell you, well, all you got to do is pray, you know, weeping may endure for a night. Joy may come in the morning, you know, but that's true. But it's not morning yet. I'm weeping now. And so someone told me that, you know, prayer definitely goes into the spirit. Medication goes into the soul. And just because you're a Christian and you are mourning and you are grieving and you are missing that loved one, that does not make you a weak Christian. That does not make you weak in your faith. Just because you're taking medication does not make you weak in your faith. It actually makes you wise, because God put all of these people, these smart people here on earth, for us to be able to have access to help us get to where we need to go. And so sometimes the church limits that and makes you feel guilty and makes you feel like, well, if I have to go to the psychiatrist or if I'm taking medication, I'm not as strong as I need to be. But like Khadija said, we got to take off the mask in the church also, because that was one of my husband's issues. He didn't get the medication he needed. He didn't get the help that he needed, because he was conditioned to think, if I go out and reach out and get this help, I'm a weak Christian and my faith in God is not strong. And that's absolutely not true. The Bible says in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. So that lets us know two things. There is safety in getting counseling, but at the same time, if I'm going to go to my pastor or someone in the church, I have to feel safe also coming to you. So just want to leave that and put that out there.
Oh, that was excellent. Thank you, Letitia. Thank you. That was well said.
Hi,
well
this
said.
Is Rhonda. Hi, Rhonda. All
Hi,
right.
Hi,
Rhonda.
Hi, you're
from your husband, sweetheart. I would just say this, the devil is alive, God is true.
Well, there you go, there you go, there you go. But we got it, we got it. So, this is Rhonda. Yeah, this is Rhonda Butler. And her chapter is entitled, A Pastor's Wife's Bitterness of Black Tea. Now, your chapter was interesting as well. So I'm not going to say anything. I want to hand it over to you. And you could just provide a little bit of information about, you know, your chapter and what made you write it. And also offer a little bit of, you know, nugget of information for the listeners to take away with.
Well, first of all, let me just say I am thankful to be a part of this collaboration among all these wonderful women of God. This is just has humbled me so in spirit. You just don't know, even in the loss of my husband. And my chapter, it was a little difficult to begin to write, particularly when you put the words hustle, flow, and pastor's wife in the same sentence. And I had to really pray and meditate about that. I can laugh about it now, but you just don't know how I stressed about that, you know. And I think other pastors' wives would understand what I'm saying. But I went to the kitchen one day, and I was cleaning out my cabinetry. And I came across all these teas that I had in my top shelf. And we always kept tea in the house because if nothing else, when we got colds or flus or whatever, or just needed that confidence, we had a tea for that. But I never did like black tea. And so that's why I said the bitterness of black tea. When I pulled that down and had that in my hand, and I began to sit down one day, and it all came together. God brought it all together. And I would just say that my chapter on the bitterness of black tea, the pastor, the pastor's wife, going through grief, my prayer is that I'm praying that many people will read the book. And because I'm hearing, you just don't know how the stories have just touched me today. I've been talking to these ladies on Facebook, whatnot, social media, but to hear their voices and to hear the depth of the grief, the love, and the joy that's still coming from their lives. I just know the book is going to be a blessing to so many people. And I want to thank you again for that.
I do hope so. Absolutely.
Yeah, I just want to say, go ahead. I just want to say that was blessed to have 28 years with my husband, 37 years married, but 28 of those years I was able to serve as a pastor's wife. And it's a journey that I am thankful that I was able to take. And this journey of widowhood, I'm going to be thankful for that. I wasn't at first. I questioned God greatly. Why me? Why I got to go through this? But he is sovereign. One thing my husband, one sermon I love that he preached was about the sovereignty of God. He's in control.
Yes.
And I
absolutely
do bow to his sovereignty, you know. But I do want to encourage readers that as you read the chapters, particularly my chapter, I do hope that your faith will guide you to the resilience to be strong in the journey, and that you will get to a point of accepting what God allows. And as you accept what he allows, that he will place a peace within your being that you will never be able to experience like any other thing in life. And that I would encourage people to give yourself time on this journey. Each of us in our own is all different for every one of us. So give yourself time. And I am encouraged now to go forward because God has been speaking to me about elevating the ministry of widowhood in our local churches. And I agree that we do not, we cover it, we leave it under the rug, you know? And we put the ladies in a corner or the gentlemen in a corner to go work with a men or women's ministry, but we have not allowed them to express their grief. There's no place for them to come together and express the grief and to work through it. And you have to work through it.
Yes, you do. And thank you for that input, especially with you being, you know, a former pastor's, a first lady or a pastor's wife. And you recognize that and you're doing something about it. So my hat's off to you. Thank you so much for that.
Again, I just thank you all for the opportunity.
Yes. Thank you, Rhonda. And, you know, we have about 7 minutes left. Is there anyone on the call who, even from the contributing authors, do you have a question for any of your, you know, co-authors?
Sabra?
Yes.
Hi, it's Maureen. I just wanted to just commend everyone because you've done a beautiful job. Everybody has encouraged me. Rhonda, I was cracking a pastor's wife and hustle and flow in the same sentence. Write that quote down, please, and put your name on it. Because that floored me. Anyway, I just want to say I'm honored and humbled, and Sabra, and thank you. And as they were talking, it was Khadijah, and it was someone else, and as about anxiety and things like that. I just want to ask and put it out to anybody, any of the, and you too, Sabra, fear. Because one of my things was the fear, and I think it was Danielle. My husband died of a heart attack. It was unexpected. It wasn't an accident, but he had chronic heart disease. So I call it the unexpected expected visitor. Meanwhile, I had fear, and I'll just say it just really subsided in year six, and I'm going into year eight, so like last year.
Mm.
But could people speak on their fear of just something happened to me, something happened to my kids, something happened to my other family members. That's it. That's what I'm putting out there.
And
I experienced that.
Go ahead, Melody.
And it was like you said, that fear of loss. After you lose someone unexpectedly, you kind of hold your breath every time someone gets sick or one of your children is out on the road and you haven't heard from them. I mean, all these things trigger that heart attack situation because my husband suffered from a massive heart attack as well and was totally unexpected. So that sudden loss of life that happened so unexpectedly kind of triggers that phobia of losing someone you love unexpectedly. And that's why for me, I've had to watch how I am with my kids because I tend to be very overprotective. Even for myself, with my own health, I start to go into kind of panic mode if I feel like something's wrong, you know, and you start to think, well, what could this be? Could this be more serious than it is? I don't want to, you know, be taken away from my children. You know, you're always in that fear mode. And what I've had to do is really spiritually just reconnect and trust God and say, Lord, you know, I'm putting all my faith and trust in you to lead and guide me and take care of me physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally. And whatever happens will happen. I cannot fear death anymore. And I am a little bit stronger in terms of how I look at the afterlife, the kingdom of heaven, and the whole issue of death, because that's something I really didn't want to face and deal with, you know. But I realized, you know, death is a very, very much a part of life. And I cannot fear death for myself or for my family members, my loved ones, because it's going to happen to all of us. But that's something I definitely have struggled with and continue to struggle with, that fear of losing someone you love, that fear of death, you know, because once it happens and it hits so close to home, you know, like you said, you kind of have a PTSD that stays with you. And unless you deal with it head on, that anxiety, that fear is always going to be there.
Absolutely.
Can I weigh in really quickly?
Go ahead, Kimberly.
Hey, so for me, my husband and I didn't have children. We have our fur baby, our dog. And what happened was, clearly, I still overly worry about everyone in my family. My little brother actually came to live with me, and I treat him like a child, which I try to fight on a daily basis. But I feel for myself, I kind of went to the other side of the spectrum where I have to fight myself to care about myself, where I feel like I honestly, you know, I'm like, if anything happens to me, I worry about my family because I don't want them to feel this pain, but I definitely don't fear death anymore. And so I kind of have to bring it back and be like, all right, Kim, don't do that, because, you know, that's not the right thing to do. And, you know, it's just interesting because, you know, I think I'm a big sister and, you know, I'm the first grandchild. And so I kind of have this attitude where I always look out for other people and myself, but I don't know. Now I don't necessarily do that for myself as much. So it's just been interesting.
Yeah. And we all have an interesting journey when it comes to fear. And thank you all for that input. We have roughly about 2 minutes left. Any additional comments before we end this wonderful podcast? Thank you, ladies, for joining.
This is Rhonda. I would just say, go forth, ladies, in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you, Rhonda. Amen to that. Thank you so much. Ladies, thank you. Oh, my goodness. Thank you for giving an hour and a half of your time. It's been exquisite. And, you know, I've written down so many nuggets of wisdom that you've provided. I really want you all to enjoy your holiday, the Thanksgiving holiday. Eat as much as you want, okay? It's on me. So, you know, I want you to just enjoy it, not only the food, but enjoy the fellowship if you're, you know, with family. If not, consider, you know, doing something different for Thanksgiving if, you know, you're not going to celebrate. But give me a call because, my phone doesn't ring as often. So I would love to talk to you as well. So I'm going to go ahead and end here. Thanks again, everyone. And I just want to give the listeners,
thank you, ladies,
a little nugget from me. Yeah,
thank you, everyone.
You know, everyone, remember, grief never ends, but it changes. It's a passage, not a place to stay. Grief is not a sign of weakness, nor a lack of faith. It is the price of love, and I do give God glory. Until next time, peace and understanding, amen, everyone. Thank you so much. God bless. Bye-bye.
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 Daddy, where do babies come from?
Honey?
Mommy went to the store.
Oh, well, you see, there's a mommy and a daddy, right?
Right.
And see, when they call Geico, they could save a bunch of money on car insurance.
Oh, really? And that makes them happy?
Yes, that makes them very happy.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could have this talk, Sunshine.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.